It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
They started making loans before they got their license, and what happened was the new law went into effect on October 1st. So as of October 1st, you cannot make a loan using a car title as collateral unless you are a licensed car title lender.
Jay Spear, Executive Director of the Virginia Poverty Law Center, tells us which unlicensed car title lenders have made thousands of illegal car title loans in Virginia since October 1, 2010, and who to contact for help. And what you need to know about rehabilitating defaulted student loan debt is explained during this week's News You Can Use. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 132, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. If you have defaulted student loan debt, you need to know about rehabilitation. Rehabilitation, in a nutshell, is this. Make 9 reasonable and affordable payments within 10 months, or 9 consecutive payments if rehabilitating a Perkins loan. If your loan is a direct loan, the loan is instantly rehabilitated upon receipt of the 9th payment. If the loan is not with direct loans, then after the 9th payment, the holder of the loan will attempt to sell it to a new lender, and after the loan is purchased, it is considered rehabilitated. The advantage of rehabilitation is, it is as if the loan never entered into default. The interesting part of rehabilitation is the reasonable and affordable payments. The regulations plainly state that the payments must be reasonable and affordable. The regulations then go further to say that the payments must be based upon a review of the borrower's financial circumstances through documents. This means the review can't happen just during a phone call. The regulations go one step further to state that no minimum payment is required, and if a review of a borrower's financial circumstances merits a monthly payment of $50, so be it. And once your loan is rehabilitated, you regain eligibility for federal student aid. In other news, Bank of America announced last month that it will pay $8.5 billion and set aside an additional $5.5 billion to settle claims by investors who bought toxic mortgage securities, making this the largest settlement yet to come from the financial crisis. The settlement agreement, which exceeds all of Bank of America's profits since the onset of the financial crisis in September 2008, will go to some of the bank's most important institutional clients, including BlackRock, Pacific Investment Management, Goldman Sachs, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, and others who bought mortgage-backed securities between 2004 and 2008. The move by Bank of America raises the possibility that other big banks, which also originated mortgage-backed securities during the pre-recession housing boom, could reach similar settlements with investors. The deal immediately drew ire from some consumer advocates because Bank of America has yet to reach a separate settlement with state attorneys general that would help homeowners. Ellen Taverna at the National Association of Consumer Advocates commented, quote, "We would hope that homeowners get the same sort of compensation that investors did. They should be treated the same way," unquote. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's case that changed the Commonwealth is Loving versus Virginia. In June 1958, two residents of Virginia, Mildred Jeter, a black woman, and Richard Loving, a white man, were married in the District of Columbia under its laws. Shortly after their marriage, they returned to Virginia and established their marital home in Caroline County. Within months, they were indicted for violating the state's ban on interracial marriages. After their conviction, they moved out of state and filed a lawsuit asking for the ban to be declared unconstitutional. In a landmark 1967 decision, the U.S. Supreme Court unanimously did so. The court held that there was no legitimate overriding purpose which justified the ban, and that restricting the freedom to marry solely because of race violated the Equal Protection Clause and deprived the Lovings of liberty without due process of law in violation of the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment. This has been the law ever since. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and Loving versus Virginia is this week's case that changed the Commonwealth.
Last month, consumer attorney Jay Spear, the executive director of the Virginia Poverty Law Center, spoke to legal aid attorneys around the state about the thousands of illegal car title loans made in Virginia since October 1, 2010, by unlicensed car title lenders. And the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show was there. Here is the beginning of Jay's talk.
The new car title loan law went into effect on October 1st. And last year, I talked a lot about the new law and what it all meant. So I'm not going to go into all that today. But what I am going to tell you is that we discovered that there is at least one car title lender by the name of Cashpoint. And by the way, Cashpoint now is a three-time offender. They were sued by the Virginia Attorney General several years ago and had to pay damages. They were sued by the District of Columbia Attorney General several years ago and had to pay damages for making illegal loans, and now they are doing it again. What we found was that they started making loans before they got their license, and what happened was the new law went into effect on October 1st. So as of October 1st, you cannot make a loan using a car title as collateral unless you are a licensed car title lender. Now, there are exceptions. If you sell somebody the car and make purchase money lien, the law doesn't apply. If you're a bank, the law doesn't apply. But just so you know, that none of the laws actually apply to banks anyway. So that's sort of a given. But what Cashpoint did, they didn't apply for their license until apparently a few days before October 1st. I don't know what the hell they thought they were doing. But of course, it takes a while for them to approve your license. And they didn't get it until December. But they decided, what the hell, let's just start making loans anyway, right? And so we've had two people call us now. One was made in October. Cashpoint has about 11 or 12 locations around the state. I know they've probably made hundreds of loans. Several other car title lenders also didn't get their license. But if you can't see this is a perp walk of mobster, which I thought was the perfect picture for car title lenders, because they literally are mobsters. And it is actually a Class 1 misdemeanor to make a car title loan without a license. So we've got a criminal violation on top of just a civil violation. And I'll tell you, we've had two people call us, one of whom I referred to a private consumer attorney who called me last night and said that they are paying substantial damages to that client, not only for giving the loan, but paying substantial damages. And I'm sure it's because they want to keep this quiet. So we are making every effort we can to not keep it quiet and to get the word out. We need more people. I know more car title lenders are doing this. this is my list. Allied wasn't licensed until February 17th. Now, I cannot believe that they didn't make any loans between October 1st and February 17th. Not to mention Allied is a known lawbreaker anyway. It's almost impossible to lose your license. I remember when I was at UVA, I had a fraternity brother that proved that you could not flunk out of UVA. And then there's the same thing. I think it's the same thing with car title lenders. You cannot seem to lose your license. But I'll tell you, these folks are subject to a triple whammy. The Attorney General's office can go after them and make them pay money. And in fact, they are investigating CashPoint right now, and we'll probably make them. What they typically do is make them pay a small amount of money and ask them to please don't do that anymore. Then the problem is that they're grossly underfunded. They have hardly any attorneys in that section, in the consumer section. But then the Bureau of Financial Institutions, which regulates them, can fine them $1,000 for each violation of the law. And the BFI once fined, a couple years ago, fined Cash and Go, which we used to call Cheat and Go, $100,000. So they do sometimes hit them. And then on top of that, they can get to an attorney and make them pay damages because it's a usury claim. And usury is basically three times the interest charges is what your damages are. So it's we could hit these folks hard if we can find a lot of the cases. But a lot of them did not get licensed. Now, the two big ones, Fast Auto and Loan Max, did get licensed on October 1st. The question was, can the Bureau of Financial Institutions, who regulates them, investigate them and find out whether they made illegal loans? Well, they certainly ought to be doing that. I don't know whether they are doing that. I do know that one legislator wrote them a few days ago and said, tell me how many of these folks made loans during this time period. I don't know whether they're going to respond to that. Stay tuned because there may be some protest action on that. I don't know. We'll see. The Attorney General does essentially what is a class action. They bring it on behalf of all Virginia consumers. And I'm sure they're going to do this with CashPoint. They're going to make CashPoint tell them how many loans they did. And the reason I know this is because the Attorney General's office has filed about seven lawsuits in the past against car title loan companies. By the way, every single one of those cases, we brought them and gave them the clients, told them what the law was, laid it all out for them, and to their credit, they took the cases. But in each one of those cases, they make them say, how many people did you do this to? And I remember at least a couple of them turned out later, oh, by the way, we forgot to tell you about this 100 people over here. But so that, yes, they can do that, and they will. But so let's be looking for those folks if you can, because we've got a chance to really stick it to them.
You're listening to a talk given in June 2011 by consumer attorney Jay Spear, the executive director of the Virginia Poverty Law Center, to legal aid attorneys around the state about illegal car title loans. We'll be back in a moment. If you're just joining us, the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show now rejoins the Executive Director of the Virginia Poverty Law Center, Jay Spear, speaking about recent pro-consumer decisions of the Virginia Supreme Court and recent pro-consumer changes in the law.
It's about yo-yo sales. For those of you that don't know, yo-yo sales are when a car dealer sells you a car, you drive away thinking you've bought the car. They then call you and say, no, your financing didn't go through because you're trying to finance through the dealer. And then they coerce the buyer into bringing the car back, or sometimes they go out and they repo the car, and other times they've even, in fact, arrested people who wouldn't bring the car back. So it's a horrible practice. It goes on a lot with our clients because our clients typically finance their car purchase through the dealer, which, by the way, is a horrible thing to do. Don't ever do that. For you folks, young folks, who may have not have bought a car before, never finance where you buy it. Never do that. That's a terrible thing. You might get yo-yoed. Now, yo-yo sales have been the subject of ongoing disputes at the Virginia General Assembly. Every single year, the car dealers try to bring some change to the law that says that they can do this. Because what they're trying to do, basically, is have a sale that's final on the buyer, but not on them. They can just change their mind. So the case I'm going to tell you about was decided by the Virginia Supreme Court, and it's been in litigation for 6 years. What happened was somebody was yo-yoed. They bought the car. They thought they'd bought it. They, in fact, lived in North Carolina. And when they didn't bring the car back, they went and they repossessed it down in North Carolina. And what Len did when this client came to him was to file a lawsuit for violation of the UCC rules about repossession and what you do with the car after you repossess it. Because under Virginia law, which is part of the Uniform Commercial Code, there are certain things you have to follow when you repossess somebody's car. And one of those things is you give them a notice saying that we've repoed your car and we're going to sell it to try to recoup what you owe us. So, of course, the car dealer didn't do that, and they're never going to do it. And what the car dealer argued in this case is that that doesn't apply because there was no default under the contract here. What we had was a void contract. We had a conditional sale, which, of course, they buried language in your contract saying this is a conditional sale, and the condition didn't work out. We didn't get the financing, and which, is, by the way, is always a lie because they do get the financing. It's just not the financing they wanted that makes them the most money. And so they decided they would yank it back and try to sell it, make more money off another deal. But what Len did and his firm did is filed a lawsuit for violation of the UCC. And when you violate that, there are statutory damages. They sued in general issue court, and the judge agreed with them and gave the buyer $15,000 in damages. The car dealer appealed it to circuit court. They won again. Then the car dealer appealed again to the Virginia Supreme Court. And lo and behold, the Virginia Supreme Court ruled today, upheld the case. So, if your client gets yo-yoed, you may well have a claim on the Article 9 of the UCC if they don't give you the notices they're supposed to give you. Now, what the car dealers could do is go ahead and give people these notices, but they won't do it. I know they won't do it. What they're going to try to do is go change the law. In fact, they tried to change the law 2 years ago to deal with this case, because this case has been going on for 6 years, I understand. And they think they've changed it, but they really haven't. So the next thing, good decision number two from the Virginia Supreme Court, which is really kind of amazing. Two pro-consumer Virginia Supreme Court cases that have been decided recently. And this was the Ruby versus Cashnet case. Now, this is a case that all of us in legal aid should be very proud about, because we set out to get this done several years ago, and we did it. And the way we did it was we formed, do you remember when we formed the creative advocacy groups? Well, we formed a creative advocacy group, and we decided what we were going to do is go after the payday lenders for doing what are referred to as back-to-back loans. The way payday loans used to work in Virginia was you made a loan, you paid it all back on your next payday. You would literally slide the money, if you borrowed $500 on your next payday or the next time you got a Social Security check, you would go in the office, you'd slide your $575 across the desk. They would then slide it back to you minus the $75 and call it a new loan. And in fact, Grant Penrod, who did the Ruby case, and I read a couple of his trial transcripts recently, and in one of them, the guy in the store said that the average time between closing one loan and opening another one was 1 to 3 minutes. And they played all these games. They instructed their employees not to say renew. You could say reborrow. And then they instructed them not to say reloan. And we actually filed 55 lawsuits that I know of. There are probably even more. A lot of them were done at Blue Ridge. Finally, and most of them settled. A few didn't. And finally, these folks at Cashnet were not very smart. And they let it go to the Virginia Supreme Court. And in fact, they defaulted and didn't even come to the Virginia Supreme Court argument. Now, I did, and where Grant argued this case, and it wasn't that long ago, and Grant was up there describing just what I described to you, how the process works. But one of the justices said, geez, that sounds like a renewal to me. I mean, it's just so obvious. But yet they've been getting away with this for years and years and years. And now we get the Supreme Court case saying that that's illegal. Now, what's the effect of that, though, is the big question. Unfortunately, a lot of the people that they did this to are going to be barred by the statute of limitations for suing. They did change the General Assembly changed the law in 2009 to say you had to wait 24 hours before you made a new loan. Plus, payday lending in Virginia has dropped off the face of the earth. It's down 90% from what it used to be. Even if you could find the folks who may have these claims, I'm not sure that they're probably going to be barred by the statute of limitations. But there are two things that could happen. One is, again, the Bureau of Financial Institutions could find these folks. I went back and added up how many loans were made between 2002 and 2009, and I think it was 18 million loans. And then I tried to calculate how many I thought were repeat loans that would have been illegal under the Supreme Court decision. And what I used was there was a study done by the Center for Responsible Lending that found that 49% of loans, a new loan is made, with payday loans, a new one is made within 24 hours. So I used that 49% and came up with 9.2 million illegal loans. If you take that times $1,000, I think it's $9.2 billion in fines. So I think that's appropriate. Now, a lot of these folks are out of business now, and I've also, the Attorney General is looking into it. All of this, Grant was nice enough to send me all this stuff, and I sent it all over to the Attorney General's office. So I really hope that they're going to do something about this and keep the payday lenders from ever coming back, those that have left and those that are hiding out doing the open-end loans. Now, changes in the debtor's exemptions. What happened was that there's a group in Virginia called the Virginia Association of Consumer Bankruptcy Attorneys, and it's mostly private attorneys that do bankruptcy. They decided that they were going to change the exemption laws in Virginia. They put together a very nice comprehensive package of really good stuff that would really help debtors in Virginia, all of which is long overdue. They took it around to different legislators, and what happened was a couple legislators put it in intact. Delegate Cole and Delegate Robin Abbott both put the bill in the way they wanted it. But one delegate decided to take one thing out of the bill, which was the exemption for guns, to increase the exemption for guns. And I'm sure he was thinking this would really curry favor with the NRA. And in fact, he had it ended up being 3,000, but I think he had it at about 6 when he put his bill in. And he had it as a family firearm. He said later that he wanted to, I guess it was like so you could protect granddad who served under General Lee, you know, his pistol or whatever. But it ended up, then the governor actually amended it to change it to just firearm. So now we have a new $3,000 exemption for firearms. We have the change in the car exemption also from 2,000 to 6,000, which is another good change. But I really think they were so embarrassed by the fact that this huge gun exemption and cars were going to be less. And we still only have 10,000 for homes. I think that's why we got the car exemption. They were just too embarrassed to not change the car. But anyway, John and Marty and I were discussing this a little while ago, and we decided that, you know, this is a new debtor exemption. I mean, clearly they're intending for debtors to use this against creditors, right? I mean, that's got to be, you know, that's how you protect your property now. Use your gun. And in fact, I never thought about this till a little while ago, but we were discussing debtors' interrogatories. It seems we ought to tell folks, take your gun. Put it on the table and say, you can't get my gun. And what questions do you have?
You've been listening to consumer attorney Jay Spear, the executive director of the Virginia Poverty Law Center, speaking to legal aid attorneys about pro-consumer Virginia Supreme Court decisions and pro-consumer changes in the law. This is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's Strange But True Law is from Title 19.2, which deals with the criminal procedure. Due to the 2001 enactment of Code of Virginia 19.2-327.2, notwithstanding any other provision of law or rule of court, upon the petition of a person convicted of a felony upon a plea of not guilty, or upon the petition of a person convicted of a Class 1 or Class 2 felony, regardless of the plea, the Supreme Court has the authority to issue a writ of actual innocence based on biological evidence. But what if you plead guilty to a Class 3, 4, 5, or 6 felony? Well, you're probably out of luck in getting a writ of actual innocence, since the statute does not apply to people who plead guilty to those felonies. So what's the penalty for a Class 3 felony? A maximum of 20 years imprisonment and a maximum fine of $100,000. So if you plead guilty to a crime for which you're innocent, make sure it's a Class 1 or a Class 2 felony. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and that's this week's Strange But True Law.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is now available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wigbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. In 2009, new military leave entitlements were added to the Family and Medical Leave Act, which provide employees up to 12 weeks unpaid job-protected leave for family and medical reasons. Join us next week when employment law attorney Phyllis Katz gives us a comprehensive look at the Family and Medical Leave Act. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegman.